I'm really not sure. I almost feel like we could leave now and it'd be amazing. All the other gods, whether it be Molech or Ashtoth or any of the other gods, you had to die for them. And he died for us. That's how much he desires you. He desires union with you. He desires relationship with you. Let's turn to Acts 28 right quick. I'm going to make you feel better. I'm not going to get my notes out. I've got several pages over there, but last week we talked on, we've been talking for the last month or so about creating new wineskins so that we can receive fresh oil, new wine from the Lord. And Jesus, in his teaching, he said that no man creates, or no man pours new wine into an old wineskin. He said, because it will stretch and it will burst and it will waste the wine. And so he's telling us in this, he said, I'm a prerequisite for receiving new whatever is to allow him, through our co-participation of creating a new wineskin in our lives, so we can receive the next, the new, the fresh. And a lot of people get offended when I say it's through co-participation with us. But if we do not respond properly to our encounters with God, then these things will not happen. It's only when we respond properly. Last week, and it's easy to talk about, we have these amazing, you know, angelic moments with God to allow that to create a new wineskin in us. But last week, we talked about the Apostle Paul in Acts 28, and it was not great circumstances. It was rough. It was brutal. They were in a cyclone and a 2-week, 14-day seasick storm while he was a prisoner. And there were some of the Roman soldiers, when it was obvious that they were going to be shipwrecked, that's like, let's kill all the prisoners. So you're sitting there and you're hearing all of this and you're like, man, I don't think God's telling me yet. I don't think this is how it ends. But through the way the Apostle Paul responded, then God used him in a mighty way once again. So it is crucial how we respond to great things and difficult things. It's crucial how we respond to the high points, but also the low points. I think it was crucial for David in the way that he responded after he got caught up in the sin with Bathsheba, and he wrote the 51st Psalm, and he was like, God, take the kingdom, but don't take your presence. I don't care about the kingdom if I don't have your presence. And that was the proper response. The proper response when Absalom rebelled against him and he was run out of Jerusalem and all of these things, and God restored him. So how we respond is crucial in this. And so we spent a lot of time last week talking about the Apostle Paul, and I felt like it was a good word. If you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to it. But today I feel like the Lord wanted me to talk about Luke, because Luke was there in the middle of it. He was puking over the side of the ship just like everybody else. He was joined to the Apostle Paul, and it wasn't all, you know, it's great being a disciple when the multitudes are getting fed and everybody's getting healed. But when they're picking up rocks to stone him and run him out of town, then being a disciple ain't as sexy then, is it, Marty? And the Lord really stirred in my heart this week as I thought about Luke and all of this and his lifelong commitment to the Apostle Paul, or since his conversion. We don't know at what point Luke was converted to faith in Christ, to a relationship with Christ. Many scholars believe it probably happened early in the Apostle Paul's ministry, after the Apostle Paul was converted. We see him joining the Apostle Paul in Acts 16 at Troas as he was beginning his second missionary journey. And I want to, as I thought about Luke, I thought, well, what are Luke's greatest contributions to the kingdom? And easily I think we would come in, Pat, and say, well, he wrote the Gospel of Luke. He wrote the book of Acts. You know, I mean, that's pretty significant, right? But perhaps, you know, God just, he always answers a question with a question to me. He said, just consider this. He said, what if his greatest contribution was his commitment to the Apostle Paul? And the fact that he helped him and he encouraged him and he ministered to him and he undergirded him. The Apostle Paul was, apart from Jesus, the greatest mind in understanding Christology and teaching Christology. He wrote 2/3 of the New Testament. And I don't want to minimize the impact that Luke had on that through connection and relation and commitment and serving and undergirding and all of that. And we think, oh, it's got to be that he wrote a gospel, but what about if he just helped the Apostle Paul finish well? Don't ever underestimate the significance or the opportunity for significance that you have in other people's lives. Don't ever consider it small. When we were in worship, I got wrecked pretty hard, and it was about the goodness of God, but the Lord carried me to probably, this has been, I don't know, I'm going to say 6-7 years ago, maybe 8 years ago, and the grandkids were little, and we were out at a worship conference in Bethel. Or we were in L.A., but it was a Bethel worship conference. And we carried the out, and the kids were immersed in it. And it was 3 days of, you know, mind-blowing, oh, my gosh, we're in the third heaven type stuff. You know, Stephanie Gretzinger and Jeremy Riddle were, you know, to me, they were the two main worship leaders. You know, it's like when Stephanie would just engage the Lord and get in there with him, it's like the heavens opened up. And we had 3 days of that intense presence. And then after the worship conference, I had rented a house for us over in Malibu. And so we went to Malibu for a few days. We're going to hang out at the beach, walk up in the mountains and all out of Malibu and just have some good chill time. And so we went up there after the conference was over. And the grandkids were little. You know, Sydney Hannah was, I don't know, she's probably 7-8 years old, maybe 9, something like that. And Zealand, you know, a couple years under her. I don't remember if Caroline was in on it or not, but they wanted to do a worship set for us. And so we were in the on the back area of the house, and it had a pool, and they were up by the pool on the pool deck, and they were going to do a worship set for us. And I'm like, we're like, all right, yeah. And I asked them, I said, "Or Peyton, I don't think you've ever heard this story." And I asked the grandkids, are y'all being Jeremy Riddle and Stephanie Gretzinger? Obvious choice, right? And they said, no, we're being Noah and Madeline Siegel. That wrecked me then, it wrecks me today. Never underestimate the power of significance that you have in somebody's life. Even when it seems insignificant what you're doing, even when it seems inconsequential that I'm not impacting that much, I'm not having that big of influence, does it really matter the things that I say, the things that I do, how I live my life? And I want to give you a resounding yes, it does. Never underestimate the impact. And I look at Luke in this. And I don't know if Paul finishes the way he finishes if Luke's not there. Or Timothy's not there. Or even John Mark, who blew it one time, but at the end of the Apostle Paul's life, he says, send Mark to me because he's profitable for the ministry. And I think we go through life, I know we go through life, thinking ourselves as inconsequential. And our goal is to be normal. And God said, you might be normal in the world's eyes, but you're not normal in that person's eyes. You're not normal in their life. You are so profound and so significant. And I want us to understand, to get this, and to place greater value on what God has brought us into with each other. Let's read the text and let's talk about Luke and let's parallel it with our life. We read of the storm last week. We read of all the stuff that they had went through. They were shipwrecked. Everybody made it to safety. There were like 267 people on the boat, I think. 276. They all made it. Of the 276, one was Paul and one was Luke. After we had noticed the shift in all of this, two-letter words that start jumping out at us in chapter 28, and it's the two-letter words, we and us. We and us. I try to be extremely intentional about something. I want to challenge you guys on this, everybody in here that's married, I want to challenge you on this. I have tried to discard the words me and my out of my life in talking of my marriage and everything that is pertaining to our marriage, and I try to use the words we and us. And I do that by design. Because I want to reinforce the understanding and the mindset and the knowledge that this is not about me or anything that I have done, nor is it about her and anything that she has done, but it is us as a collective. And expanding that, that's marriage. I gave Alex, I gave y'all marriage counseling last week. In here, that's another marriage counseling there. It's not me, my, it's we, us. Everything we do affects we, us. Every decision we make is we, us. And that signifies union, not cohabiting, not contract, not even a base form of covenant. That signifies union. Okay? That signifies union. And I love the shift in wording right here. We first see it in Acts 16 where he starts using we and us. That tells us that Luke was indeed with the Apostle Paul. And he comes in here in chapter 28, James, and there's this shift in wording again. And he starts saying we and us. We were shipwrecked. We were on this island. I was there with the Apostle Paul, and that matters. It matters. God brings people into our lives for a reason. God puts us in people's lives for a reason. And so often we fail in embracing that and letting Him develop that. Kind of ties in with the conversation you and I were having before church, Eric. It's this intentionality on connectivity. And I think a lot of times we say, I don't have room for somebody else in my life. I don't have room for somebody else to mentor, or somebody mentor me, or to whatever. And we say, I say it all the time, guys. I am probably the most guilty person in here. I make the statement, man, I don't have time for any more friends. I'm happy with the friends I've got. I don't have enough time with the friends I've got. I don't need any more friends. Don't need any more people in my life. And God said, who's restricting the size of your tent now? Who's restricting the size of your tent now? We ran into a lady in Florida this week. And we were in a store after we'd ate breakfast, and Lori and the girls were shopping and all of this stuff, and I had my Black Rifle Coffee t-shirt on. She said, I know about that. I know where that is. That's in Utah. I said, yeah, in Heber. She said, how you know about that? I said, we spend a lot of time out there. She said, we do too. She said, we got a house right over here, and we're 50-50 here and there. And I said, well, we're about 15 minutes from you. She said, oh, let me get y'all's phone number, and we can connect and all of this stuff. And I got grandchildren about the age of your grandchildren and all of this stuff. And I'm like, you know, I'm like being nice. I'm like, no. She goes and gets a pad and some paper, and she wants names and phone numbers. So guess who she got? Lori and Aaliyah's. Getting my name and number. No matter how her husband wants to learn to fly fish and all this stuff. And I'm like, God, is this a setup? Because I ain't got time. Scott will take him. I'll give you his number and when he's going to be out there. He'll hook him up. That's just an example. I don't know if that's supposed to be anything or not. I have no idea. I'm not putting weight in it. But I'm wrong to rule out all of these things. And we say, I don't have time. And what he's saying, are you saying that I can't redeem your time? I don't have energy. Are you saying I can't redeem your energy? Because I believe in the power of the tongue. I believe there's power of life and death in the tongue. And if I declare I have no time, then my time will not be redeemed and I won't have time. It'll slip away through my fingers. If I say I don't have energy, then you know what? I will walk without energy and I'll blame it on hormones and testosterone and old age and everything else. And God says you are limiting yourself with the power of your tongue. I'm glad this ain't hitting none of y'all, because this is all the preacher said. I'm thankful for Luke as much for being there for Paul as I am for him writing the gospel. Thank you for being in my grandchildren's life. I don't take that for granted. I don't have to wonder who's going to be over there when Aaron Rhett's out of town. I don't have to worry about who's going to keep Boone. Michaela, she's just faithful. You're always there. Thank you for that. Thank you for impacting them. Sarah Grace, thank you. They look up to you so much. Thank you for being you. And we think it's small and we think it's insignificant sometimes because the enemy tells us it is. And he tells us you're not enough. Tells me I'm not enough. Tells me that was a bad sermon. I should have said this and I shouldn't have said this. And I rambled and I preached too long. And, you know, even Luke said the Apostle Paul was long-winded. I need your consistent faith, so thank you for that. Even if you're going through a poop storm, okay? Thank you for your consistent faith. It's not just when everything's good and Robin's loving Jesus. It's when you're like, my gosh, I'm in the middle of a 14-day cyclone. And I'm about to get washed up on the beach and bit by a snake. And my faith's still consistent. That's huge, guys. You want to tie that into worship? Isaac was talking about worship a while ago. And yes, this is a beautiful form of worship and this is a pure form of worship. But I want to tell you something. Our lives are supposed to be worship. Scott, when you plowed my mama's garden up for her a couple weeks ago when I was out of town, you know what that was? That was worship. Yahweh, I believe Abba. I'm trying to stop calling him Yahweh and call him more Abba. I believe Abba's nudging Jesus and said, "Whoa, isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? Everything that you ladies did today in preparing to bless and honor Peyton and Madeline and their babies and their family, that's worship. We think it's duty. But it's worship. Every time you get on a plane and risk missing a connection, the Lord's like, isn't that beautiful? Where is it you're going? Nicaragua? Venezuela? Nicaragua? Nicaragua? You going down there to teach some? Preach? I hadn't even heard all the details. I don't know what you're doing. You're just going. You know what that is? Your obedience is worship. You may not know until you get there, but when you get there, you're going to know. And it might be just to impact and transform one person. Like the maniac of Gadara, it might not be that extreme, but God touched one person. He said, now you stay here. He said, I want to follow you. The only time I see where somebody wanted to follow Jesus and he said no, because I want you to impact this region, because you got a testimony, son. You got a testimony, son. You can impact some people because everybody knows you as the crazy dude in the cemetery that is able to break chains and cut himself with rocks, and now you're sitting sound and in your right mind because of Jesus. Never underestimate the significance of your yes to being connected to somebody or connected to a place. Connected to a group of people. After we had safely reached land, we discovered that the island we were on was Malta. The people who lived there showed us extraordinary kindness, for they welcomed us around the fire they had built because it was cold and rainy. When Paul had gathered an armful of brushwood and was setting it on the fire, a venomous snake was driven out by the heat, latched onto Paul's hand with its fangs. When the islanders saw the snake dangling from Paul's hand, they said to one another, no doubt about it, this guy is a murderer. Even though he escaped death at sea, justice has now caught up with him. How did they know they were saying that? Luke heard them. Luke heard him saying that. And he didn't jump in on the bandwagon. He didn't say, that might be God's punishment in Paul's life. I know y'all have never picked up rocks and joined in on the pelting, have you? You didn't start it, but you jumped right in on social media. You know what I find interesting in this text? Verse 5 says, but Paul shook the snake off, flung it into the fire, and suffered no harm at all. Everyone watched him, expecting him to swell up or suddenly drop dead. After observing him for a long time and seeing that nothing unusual happened, they changed their minds and said, he must be a god. People are fickle. But I'm talking about Luke today. Y'all find it amazing that Luke was a physician? And he records nothing about him going over and trying to minister first aid to the Apostle Paul. First thing I do, if I got bit by a snake in this group of people, you know what I'd do? I'd be getting these, we got all these medical people in here. I'd be like, Noah, come, you know, Deborah, come do some, Madeline, y'all come do something right here. You know, we'll go the Westerns, you know, Brett, we'll slice it with a knife and suck the blood out. There you go, brother. That's what John Wayne would do. True grit, right? But Luke knew God had this. Didn't feel compelled by the Holy Spirit to fix anything. He said, I'm here and I'm with this guy and I'm committed to this guy and let's watch God work this out. And God elevated it because Paul was like, shake it off. And then they went from this guy's a murderer to he must be a god. The Roman governor of the island named Publius had his estate nearby. He graciously welcomed us as his house guests and showed us hospitality for the 3 days that we stayed with him. His father lay sick in bed, suffering from fits of high fever and dysentery. So Paul went into his room and after... I thought Luke was the doctor. So Paul went into his room and after praying, placed his hands on him. He was instantly healed. When the people of the island heard about this miracle, they brought all the sick to Paul and they were also healed. They brought all the sick to Paul. I thought Luke was the doctor. The islanders honored us greatly, and when we were preparing to set sail again, they gave us all the supplies we needed for our journey. What I want to say on that is, are we okay serving? Do we embrace? I'm not even going to say okay. Do we embrace serving somebody else's vision? Do we have the right heart, mindset, attitude when our gifts aren't on display? I heard a minister say something this past week that was a different point of view than I've ever looked at. And he was talking about the incarnate of Christ. And we always say, and rightfully so, we say Jesus, Bill Johnson was the first person I ever heard say this. He said, Jesus is perfect theology. Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Jesus showed us exactly what Abba looks like. His personality, his character, his nature, all of these things. Jesus said, if you've seen me, you have seen the Father. But the point of view I've never looked at, I know that he was the Son of Man, and I know he lived a perfect, sinless life. But the point of view, the lens I've never looked through, was that Jesus was God's idea of what man should look like. Jesus, when you know, I kid Lori all the time, Isaac, you're going to like this. I've got a big buckskin quarter horse that's just, he's awesome. And I said, you know, when God was thinking up what a horse was going to look like, I said, he looked like Ariat. That's his name. He looked like Ariat. And I said, that's, you look up horse in the dictionary and they got a picture of Ariat right there. Well, when in God's dictionary, when you think man, the second Adam, what he was supposed to look like, he looked like Jesus. And so what I think, you remember years ago, all of this went through this big WWJD. Everybody remember that? What would Jesus do? But the push from that was more of a morality thing. And the challenge for me is not a morality thing, but it is a heart thing, an attitude thing, a mindset thing, a motive thing. And in Luke, he served the Apostle Paul so beautifully because he's a doctor and I don't see him ministering to anybody in his area of gifting. And he was okay with that. He was okay with that. I would ask the worship team, would you worship like this if you weren't on the payroll? But none of them are on the payroll. So the answer is what? Yes. But how do we serve when somebody else has got the seeming spotlight of God? I believe heaven was rejoicing over Luke and what he was doing as much as they were rejoicing over Paul and what he was doing. We know heaven rejoiced over Stephen for getting stoned, because it was the heart posture. It was the Christology that he was. See, he had heard somebody before say, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." I'm either probably trying to get away or I'm throwing rocks back if I feel like I'm just, because I'm right, you know. And what does he say? What he heard that Jesus said. And so we see this proper heart posture. I lied to you. I am going to look at this right quick. I just want to hit these high spots. I don't want to miss any of them. I had some takeaways and questions. First one was, do we allow God to connect us to people? Do we allow God to connect us with people? I want to tell everybody in here, you need people in your life. You need people in your life. I don't care what age you are. I don't care your marital status. I don't care any of those. You need people in your life. Luke allowed God to connect him to Paul, and Paul allowed God to connect Luke to him. So a big question for me is, do I give them somebody else's number, or am I open? And am I open to a deeper relationship with you? Well, I've only got X amount of time. See, I've got it carved out. Okay, God says you're not allowing me to redeem any time. Do we allow God to connect us to people? Everything is not going to be a kingdom connection, but some of them are, and when they are, you better respond in the appropriate way, or you're going to miss out and they're going to miss out. Some of them are lifetime connections, some of them are seasonal connections, but God will connect you with people if you allow him to do so. And it's not always about how is this going to benefit me. It might be he's connecting you to them for them. And that thing goes both ways. There are times I need you more than you need me, and there's times you need me more than I need you. But God knows those moments, and God knows those times. So a challenge for you and everybody in the busyness of life, do you allow God to connect you to people? Second takeaway, second question, because these are takeaways and questions. I said this, am I willing to serve another person's vision? Are you good? Just, you know who's a champ at this? I believe sometimes you need to give public recognition. You know who's a champ at this? Brenda's a champ at this with Project World. I love your servant's heart. And it happened from the first time you stepped foot down there. You recognized us, and this is her testimony to me. I've been around her, and I've heard it, and I've been down there and served with her and all of that stuff. But you allow God to connect you with this group of people, and you allowed God to connect you with those people. Guess who doesn't get billboard action out of that? Brenda. Unless you're talking about billboard action in heaven. Aren't y'all thankful for her? Thankful God brought her into y'all's life. Just to come and not needy. She don't need anything. See, there ain't nothing parasitic about her. It's like, how can I serve? Give me more to do. Right? My gosh, you don't even mind calling her up and saying, take me to the airport at 2 a.m. And she does it. I bet with joy. That's what we're talking about, Brenda. You know what? You could have said no and said, I'm not going to Honduras, so a third world country with a bunch of people I do not know. Because when she went, she didn't know any of us. But you said yes. And you know what? It has been rich in our life, but I can also say because I've looked and I've seen the transformation in you just the time I've known you, I've seen the transformation, it's been rich for you too. But you know what that starts with? A yes. So you can be closed off all day long and be at your own little island, and you know what? You're going to struggle. I should have told that little couple the other morning eating breakfast a fourth thing. That fourth thing would have been allow God to put you in a community. A community, because you need a community. You can love Jesus and you can love each other and you can work hard, but you need that community. I see that in Luke. I'm thankful for Luke. Are you faithful when circumstances cause it to be unpopular or uncomfortable? It was easy to be the Apostle Paul's friend when he's raising a kid from the dead, even though he was long-winded and preacher. I can handle that because he's, dude. He's so anointed. His words are transforming. And I'll be his friend. But what about can you be his friend when all of a sudden he's a prisoner of Rome? You are one of his known associates. Peter? No, I'm not. I don't know the man. Not only was Luke staying connected and committed to the Apostle Paul when things were good, but he was connected and committed when he was in chains. He was connected and committed so much so that I'll get on this prisoner ship with you. I bet, I'm pretty confident he had to pay his fare to get on that ship. He wasn't a prisoner, but he said, I'm connected to this man. This man's going through hell. Guess what? I'm going through hell with him. Think about the people that have gone through, and y'all, the figure of speech I'm using, y'all know what I'm talking about. Think about the people that have gone through hell with you. And they were there. That will cause a spirit of thanksgiving to be in you. I can see the Apostle Paul on the ship and they're day 12 into being seasick. And Luke's over there, he's probably done hurled everything he can hurl, but he's hanging over, he's dry heaving over the side of the ship. And I can see the Apostle Paul sitting there saying, that man is with me. He's still here. He is still here. When it wasn't popular to be my friend, he was my friend. Are you faithful when circumstances cause it to be unpopular or uncomfortable? I don't know where Luke was in his faith and confidence. I am just guessing right here. I'm not even making a guess right here, but when the Apostle Paul was on, when they were on the Isle of Malta and they had been shipwrecked and then that snake bit the Apostle Paul and he hears all the murmurs of the people that are saying this guy's got to be a murderer. I bet there was just some little something in him saying, man, I'm not sure which way this is going to go. There was at least that possibility. I don't know which way this is going to go. But I do not see him shrinking back from the Apostle Paul. One reason I love John, many reasons. One reason is because John felt enough union that he thought it was okay to lay his head on Jesus right here. But another thing, when everybody else is scattered, John's standing at the foot of the cross. when nobody else is there but a bunch of women, John's there, that we see recorded. When God connects you to somebody, are you going to be there? When it's unpopular, when it's uncomfortable. A couple other things. Are we quick to engage in sword fights to defend someone or our ideology? You notice what? There is a time to defend somebody. There is a time to defend. I don't think we have to defend. I think God does a pretty good job defending himself. But there's a time to defend somebody. But I think a lot of times we're too quick to pull our sword out in the garden instead of letting God work things out. And so we bomb it all over social media because we want to get into a debate with somebody because we know we're right and we know they're wrong. I know there are a lot of stupid people out there and all, but for me to engage with them constantly and tell them, remind them how stupid they are, is that, does that look like Jesus? And I don't know, man. I'm just sitting here and you got Luke and they're like, he must be a murderer. And I'm thinking in my flesh, I'm going to jump up and say, you don't know him. I've walked with this man for 10 years. He was a murderer, but God redeemed him. Not the murderer that you think, the murderer that killed Stephen and other Christians. Yes, he was. But he didn't feel the need that he said. He said, God's got this. God's got this. I just think we carry too many swords into gardens. Amen, brother said. I like carrying a sword. You know? The what ifs. What ifs. I might have to defend myself with somebody, and I'm not talking about physical. We might get in a sword fight on the word and prove to them that I'm right and they're wrong. And they're stupid and I'm not. Right? Me and Aaliyah. Fifth thing, am I okay if my gifting is not taking center stage or being used? We talked about this. Luke was the physician and Paul did the healing. When we went to Guatemala years ago on a mission trip, and some of you guys, y'all went with us, and, you know, we were rocking and rolling with the Lord, you know, we thought we were just God's mighty man of power for the hour and all of that stuff, Robin, and we went down there, and you know what me and Randy did for 7 days? We laid block. People say, what'd you do on a mission trip? And I was like, well, you know, Lori distributed medicine and they saw these miraculous things and laid hands on people and all of this stuff. And we laid block. Mescla. Me and Randy and Chris Meacham. Spider monkey in the rafters. Scott and Rhett welded all week. They welded the rafters. But I'm supposed to be the preacher man, right? You know the only sermons I preached that week? We're laying block and washing the pastor's feet one night, me and Lori did. Him and his wife. Two of the best sermons I've ever preached. Was laying block for 7 days and washing the pastor and his wife's feet. We got our giftings and we've got our strengths and we've got all of these things. Are we okay if God says, I don't need that right now? I know you're awesome, but I just want you to love on this person. I just want you to serve this person. I just want you to undergird this person. Help strengthen this person. Help mentor this person. not walk around and say, I'm going to let my mantle fall on you. Man, I just want to love y'all well. I just want to love you well. That's all I want to do, Trevor. And if I do that in loving you well, you know what that means? It means I'll be there for you. Because I can talk about Madeline and get all mushy and cry over her because she's pregnant and looking beautiful right now and all of that stuff. I've seen pregnant women all week long. Everywhere I turn to pregnant women. And all of them have looked amazing to me. Walked in and saw Angela, you know, used to be Kaiser last night, and she's going to have her baby in 3 weeks. She's big. I told her, I was like, girl, she looks good. She does. I said, you're beautiful. You look like a pregnant woman's supposed to look. You are full of life. She said, well, I'm about to pop. Any day now, 3 weeks still on the countdown. But the way I feel for her is, I know we're guys and this ain't good dude talk, but I feel that same way about you, Trevor. I love watching you grow up, man. I love sitting back and watching God work and orchestrate in your life. And you're not vocal and flashy and all of that. But, dude, his heart for you is so, so huge. And when we see that, because you know why? Because God connected me to him and to her. So you know what that means? By default, God connected me to you. And God connected me to you. And by default, Jack, God connected me to you. Because he connected you to her and he intertwined y'all's lives. This is as much the kingdom as anything, guys. And lastly, the last thing I see is I have to ask the question, how do we host? Because I see this in the Apostle Paul, and Jesus was masterful in this. Even when Jesus was the guest, he was the host. Even when Luke was the faithful companion, the faithful servant, the faithful friend, you know what he was doing? He was hosting. He was hosting Paul. On this circumstance, he was hosting 274 soldiers and prisoners and other people that were on the ship. He was hosting an entire island. You say, how was he hosting? He went to the governor's house for 3 days. They stayed for 3 months. He hosted because Bill Johnson says this, and it's beautiful. He said, when Jesus comes, he brings his world with him. And when Marty Smith comes, he brings his world with him. And when the Apostle Paul came, he brought his world with him. And when Luke came, he brought his world with him. I believe heaven has two currencies. I believe the currency of heaven is love and peace. And you know what these boys brought with them? Love and peace. That's why Paul could shake off a viper and not worry about it, and why Luke, as a physician, could sit back and say, God's going to do something cool right here. Now, I'm probably cutting it and getting Luke to suck the blood out of it at least, right? How do we host? Are we so closed off that we don't allow people into our world? You know how you preach the gospel? It's usually not with this. It's usually not with a track. It's usually not, I'm going to witness to you because I don't want you to die and go to hell. It's usually by opening up your world and said, look at this world. It's amazing. Question for you guys. I ain't picked on y'all in a while. What's going to differentiate you guys from all these other married couples? I mean, there ain't no telling how many people got married in the same time frame y'all did. What's going to differentiate y'all? A different kind of love. He is in you. Christ in you, the hope of glory. Christ in you, the hope of the world. Christ in me, in myself, I'm not good enough. Y'all know me, man. I've been y'all's pastor for a long time. Y'all have heard me say stupid things. Y'all don't know how many times I've repented and said, God, why did I say that when I was preaching? I've done stupid things. Lord's like, you always go too far, one step too far. And I'm like, I know. But the thing she loves about me is I always say, let's go one step further. Right? So what is going to differentiate you? Relationally, what differentiates you? I hope it's love. I hope it's peace. I hope it's depth. I hope it's consistency. So we look at all these things about God, all of these attributes about God, and there's no shadow of turning and all of that. What differentiates us? What makes the gospel that I preach different than the rhetoric of all the other religions out there in the world's eyes? And we say, well, it's Jesus. It is, but they don't know him yet. So how will they know him? Unless there's something about Brett House, something different about Brett House. Unless there's something different about the way we love each other, the way we minister to each other, the way that we undergird each other, the way that we serve each other, the way that we're consistently there for each other. Until you do something stupid, and then I'm going to jump on the bandwagon on social media and rip you to shreds. The world can do that. The world does that. What does Jesus tell the guys in John? I'm closing with this. What does Jesus tell the guys in John? He said, they will know that you are my disciples by the love that you have for one another. How well do I love you, Marty Smith? I'm thankful for that connection. Sitting in Bilbo's one day. Heard about the mission trips and all the buzz. You know, Project World was small. Just some folks going to Honduras and trying to advance something that Soyla and Tim, God had birthed in them. And now you're the rock star, and you started out serving somebody else's vision. When I say rock star, I'm just picking on Marty, because the first time we went to Honduras and we walked in the gates, everybody was like, Marty! I mean, it was like crazy. I mean, all these guys like, Marty's here, Marty's here. And I'm like, do you know everybody? And he said, well, there's 58 people in the airport, and I know 20 of them, so. But you know what I'm saying on that? You said yes because God moved on your heart when you went on a mission trip without Krista, without your daughters, and God so stirred on you and you said, there is something here. And so you know what you did? You said yes to that. And you didn't look like Paul, you looked more like Luke. And God said, that looks like worship to me. And you know what it did? It undergirded, I didn't know Tim, but it undergirded Soyla. And the love she has for you. because you said yes and you served well. Then we got to jump in on it a few years later, man, and it just, and I'm thankful for that. But you know what I could have said? Man, I ain't got time to do that. Here's a $100 check, brother. Go bless those people in the third world country. He doesn't need what limited preaching skills I have. I say, our job is just to undergird you guys and to love on you guys and to serve you guys. And many of you, I'm kind of like Brenda. Maybe help you on this spiritual journey. But you know what it starts with? A yes. All right? So this week, who will you say yes to? It might not be a stranger. It might be her. It might not be a stranger. It might be him. It might not be a stranger. It might be your son-in-law. But when God wants to do some type of a connection, some type of a tethering, what will your answer be? I'm thankful for Luke's yesterday. Because of the two books that he wrote in the Bible. But in this moment, even more so for the impact he had on the Apostle Paul. And the fruit that we get out of that. That's what kingdom looks like, guys. It's not lights, it's not smoke, it's not flash. It's how do we love, how do we serve. I used to love the little Hard Rock saying, you know, there's still some Hard Rock around. Back then, that was kind of the thing. We'd go to the Caribbean and all these places, and the girls would have to have a Hard Rock t-shirt, you know, from all these places. But you know what their motto was? Love all, serve all. I was pretty religious back then, and that still, I was like, that's kingdom right there. I know it's Hard Rock. And I got Sammy Hagar right here, but they're saying love all and serve all right here. How do we do that? What is our heart for doing that? Let's stand to our feet. I don't know why I feel the need to apologize to y'all all the time for preaching so long, but the gospel is just so good. It is just so good. It's so beautiful. A lot of them ain't. I run off a lot of them. Thank you for being connected to me and my family. Thank you for that. I pray that I would have a heart of thanksgiving for all of these people that God has brought into my life. That have helped me in life. Helped me in my journey, my faith journey that's challenged me, encouraged me. Father, I pray. We're praying right now. Father, I pray that all of us would walk in such a heart of thanksgiving and such a heart of gratitude. Let us reciprocate and love on those that love us so well. Let me recognize them as your gift in my life. Let me celebrate that. Let me honor that. And let me sow into that. And I pray, Father, for every person in here that we talk about wanting to expand our tent stakes and our fields. Give us the courage and give us the push to do so. Trusting that you can redeem our time, you can redeem our energy, you can redeem our passion. And Lord, I pray you just stir in each of us. I pray we'd love the world well. We'd serve the world well. And Father, I pray that as they come back and they celebrate these firstborn babies, these two firstborn sons, that Peyton and Madeline would be overwhelmed. Josh and Noah, too, that they'd be overwhelmed at the love that you have for them and the love that your people has for them. And I pray that it would just wash over them. Let them feel it. Let them receive it. Let them know that they are loved. Let them know that their child is loved and highly honored and deeply esteemed. And Father, I pray that would just let that be a foundation in them, that there is significance in them by how much they are loved. And we just thank you for your goodness. We thank you for your love for us. We thank you for your pursuit for us, Father, your pursuit of us. It's in Jesus' name I ask these things. Now, thank you, Abba. Amen.